This Second Childhood production is for the Killer Bees podcast and imixwhatilike.org. Veteran community journalist Tandisizwe Chimurenga, who covered closely the killing of Oscar Grant and subsequent trial of his killer, Johannes Messerli, joined us to discuss her forthcoming book, No Doubt, The Murder of Oscar Grant. I began by asking her to tell us about her book and why she began early on in the introduction that, quote, in order to fully understand what just happened at the Fruitvale Station in the early morning hours of January 1st, 2009, it is necessary to have an accurate understanding of white supremacy.
Well, this book is my recollections and my analysis of the trial of Johannes Messerli for the murder of Oscar Grant. I was able to cover that trial for Oakland Local, New American Media, and the San Francisco Bayview newspaper. Once the trial was moved to Los Angeles, I was one of the reporters that was there every day, pretty much every day, except for, I think, 3 days. And so my recollections, again, my analysis, going over court transcripts, in addition to relying on my memory and what I know from being born and raised here in the United States as a black woman, I felt it was important to document what happened, and I also felt it was important to document my voice and my thoughts about what happened. I was infuriated by what I saw on the video of Oscar Grant's murder, and the infuriation, my being infuriated, it was not allowed a chance to simmer. More things continued to happen after the murder. The way Oscar Grant specifically was dehumanized in the media, the more I saw that as I followed the happenings leading to the trial and then at the trial, I just felt it was important to have a record of that and to document what I thought those particular things meant. Part of the infuriation was just a good old-fashioned, I don't understand what's going on. And so when I say we need to have an understanding of white supremacy, that was also to help me. Because when you file a legal document in court and you're asking a judge to rule on this legal document that states we're going to ask the judge to make sure that the prosecutor and the prosecutor's witnesses do not refer to Oscar Grant as the victim because we don't know that a crime has been committed. See, I need an understanding of how you fix your mouth to even say something like that. Or how do you get your fingers together to type something like that up? Because I don't understand. Who doesn't know that a crime has been committed? I know a crime has been committed. I know what I saw. So that understanding of white supremacy and how African people in this country have been devalued, how we are seen as being below, sub, I needed to get that clear to help me understand and process what I was seeing before my very eyes. And so I thought I would share that with the readers.
After outlining your argument regarding white supremacy, making reference to Charles Mills, Du Bois, Christian Williams, and bell hooks, and then explaining further your own interpretive lens, what is it that you say happened starting January 1st, 2009?
Well, basically what happened was that there was a fight on a train involving a multiracial group of people. Witnesses who reported the fight on the train to the train operator identified only black males. That is what was relayed to BART police. At the time that a BART police officer arrived on the scene, the quote-unquote fight, if it really was a fight, had dissipated. There was no more fighting. There was no more attempting to fight. There was no more scuffling. There were just people standing and walking on a platform. The call that came to through dispatch said, large group of BMs, black clothing, BM standing for black males. So when the first police officer on the scene, Anthony Peroni, comes up, he sees a group of people, two of who get back on a train. The people walking towards them, he puts his hand on the chest of one person and says, get over there against the wall. And then he starts going up and down the platform with his taser in his hand, yelling, cursing, banging on the train's windows and doors, telling people to get the F off the train. So this is where we start. We start with a racist, at worst, or at the good end, a misidentification of somebody involved in an activity, and everything begins to flow downhill from that.
Now, you've also had a chance to read my own critique of the new film Fruitvale Station, the film by Ryan Coogler about Oscar Grant. You've said that you both agreed and disagreed with me. Can you start there and use that to segue into your thoughts of the film, or more importantly, what your book will give an audience who has maybe seen the film but is less familiar with the trial or subsequent events, uprisings, etc.?
Well, from the beginning, your critique of the movie is, I think it's spot on, but it's also spot wrong. And again, you mentioned that I did disagree with you. On the one hand, yes, there's a tremendous lack of context from the film. Why are we going to a movie theater to see a movie about this young black man who has made, a New Year's resolution of sorts to do something different with his life, who's going to stop selling weed? You know, he saves a dog a stray dog out in the middle of the street. Why are we sitting here watching this film? We don't know anything about this person from this particular film. What we do know about this person is based on everything that happened after that gunshot on January 1st, 2009. Everything that flows from that, we don't have that in this particular film. So on the one hand, there is that lack of context, but on the other hand, that was not the author's intention to give you all of that history, to give you all of that politics. His intention was to talk about this person's last day. And to a certain extent, I can understand where he's coming from. You know, Ryan Coogler said he was 22 when Oscar Grant was murdered. He was also 22. He talks about the fact that Oscar could have been him. Oscar's friends looked like his friends. Oscar dressed the way he had dressed. When that bullet entered Oscar Grant's back, it was felt by a lot of 22-year-old black males. It was felt by a lot of 42-year-old black males. It was felt by a lot of black women. So I empathize with his empathy. I understand where he's coming from. So on the one hand, I don't want to condemn him too much for not making the film that I thought he should have made. But on the other hand, there's definitely a lack of context that could have been given to moviegoers to get a better understanding of how important this is, of how this particular life was snatched, of how this potential, as Ryan talks about, was taken away not only from his family, but his community.
You give a thorough account of the trial. Please tell us a bit more about what people who saw the film, which says nothing of the trial, will learn about this incident, about this case, about this murder of Oscar Grant.
They would learn that pretty much it was a cover-up. A lie was told, a very insulting and disgusting lie was told so that another white man could get off for shooting a young black man. The lie that was told was that Johannes Mezley was going to tase Oscar Grant, but mistakenly pulled his gun instead. And all of the evidence, and again, this is based primarily on, again, my recollections from sitting in the trial and witnessing, and from the transcripts of everything that was said under oath, hand on the Bible, in the courtroom. Every now and then I reference the preliminary hearings, which I did not attend. That was held in Northern California. These were the hearings that were held to determine whether or not Johannes Mezley should in fact stand trial for the murder of Oscar Grant. So I did not witness those personally, but I do have some of those transcripts. So based upon what is said in court, Johannes Mezley never said it was an accident, that I accidentally grabbed my gun, that what was said by Johannes Mezley and everyone who was around him, including days afterwards, is that Johannes Mezley said, I thought he was going for a gun. And if you know anything about black life in America, you know that that is the universal get out of jail free card, especially for a police officer. I thought he had a gun. Ironically, if Johannes Mezley had simply stuck to that story, he probably would never have spent one day in jail. But because of the lack of respect for the intelligence and humanity of black people, this story was concocted, and they ran with it all the way till the wheels came off to the wall. They ran with it. And it is because not only of what we saw on that grainy, that YouTube video, but it was also just the insulting nature of trying to put this on us, this lie on us, that was so infuriating that caused people to be in the streets. Why have no charges been filed against Johannes Mezley? How is it that he's in Nevada while we're still over here wondering what's going on? Why hasn't he been charged? Why hasn't he been arrested? How come he hasn't said anything? Why hasn't the mayor of Oakland said anything? What is going on? People were mad as fish grease, hot as fish grease, as we say, and Oakland was like, you got to do something before we tear this city up. And that's usually, unfortunately, that's the surefire way for black folks, it seems, to get justice, to get an attention called on an injustice. It's like, look, if we're going to tear something up if you do not respond. And after that response, Johannes Mezley was charged with murder. His bail was raised $3 million by police advocacy groups. And incidentally, you know, again, I talk about it in the book. My law degree came from Law and Order, just like a lot of regular folks. You know, I'm not a court reporter. I'm a general community beat reporter. But when you give someone a bail of $3 million, what does that say about this person and the nature of the crime they are charged with? You're charged with murder, an intentional unjust act, and you have left the state. You have basically fled. You have Morris Jacobson, who was the presiding judge at the time, who increased the bail amount on Johannes Mezley, said, look, you've made inconsistent statements about your motivations for pulling your gun or mistakenly pulling your gun. I really don't think you're telling the truth. This is the reason why his bail was set at $3 million. So that says something about the nature of what actually happened, as opposed to the lie they were trying to force down people's throats.
Yeah, and in that vein, I do want you to tell us why your book is titled as it is, and in particular, why you have at the beginning a quote from Judge C. Don Clay, quote, "There's no doubt in my mind that Mr. Messerly intended to shoot Oscar Grant with a gun and not a taser," end quote.
Yes, actually, I guess things happen for a reason. I started to say that that was actually a fluke on my part, but again, I think things happen for a reason. When I was sitting in the courtroom in Los Angeles listening to Judge Robert Perry give the admonitions and the instructions to the jury, and when I would listen to the prosecuting attorney and when I would listen to Johannes Mezley's defense attorney, they would stress reasonable doubt about how you have to have a deep and abiding belief or faith or conviction in the material that's being presented to you. And if you do not have that, then that's reasonable doubt. In other words, there has to be no doubt in your mind about this person's guilt or innocence. And I just kept thinking about that and thinking about that. And then after I went back and looked at the transcripts and I saw what the presiding judge, Don Clay, actually said, that there was no doubt in his mind, I said, that's got to be the title of this book. You know, this is the judge who made the decision that, yes, Johannes Mezley should stand trial for the murder of Oscar Grant.
But he was, in what order was he the judge presiding over this issue? Because
this was the preliminary hearing that was held in Northern California, May through June, to decide, again, whether or not Johannes Mezley would stand trial. Prior to that, Morris Jacobson was the judge who was appealed to in order to grant bail to Johannes Mezley, which occurred late January, early February of 2009.
And so perhaps then I had this wrong and need to be corrected, but as I understood it, there were multiple changes in venue trying to find a judge that disagreed with Judge Clay.
No. There was a request was made for a venue change, and there was a hearing held on that venue change. The venue change was granted. There were three cities listed as possible: Los Angeles, San Diego, and Sacramento, and Los Angeles was chosen. Now, Morris Jacobson was also the judge who oversaw that portion, that request of where can we get a change of venue. Now, I think it's interesting, and I talk about it in the book also, how Morris Jacobson was also the judge, not only who increased the bail on Mezley, but he had also stated, now, and I'm paraphrasing, now, just because this has been moved to L.A., don't think that you're not going to let African-Americans be on this jury. Hmm. And that's exactly what happened. No African-Americans, no black folks were chosen whatsoever to be on this jury. Michael Raines, Johannes Mezley's defense attorney, submitted in his brief in his request for a change of venue, evidence of a poll conducted in Alameda County. And in this poll, he basically said that of all, I think maybe 300 to 400 people were polled, Alameda County residents. He said basically all the black folk, 90% of the black folk, think my client is guilty. They are a large proportion of the county, Alameda County, i.e. they will be a large proportion of jurors. My client will not receive a fair trial in Alameda County. We've got to move this trial. And the press played a lot of attention. The press paid a lot of attention to that, as they rightly should have. But it was, again, after the trial is over with, and I have an opportunity to look back and process on this, what I began to see, but what I did not know at the time, is that, yeah, I'm pretty much majority of black folk may have thought he was guilty. But these Bay Area judges seem to be consistently also believing that Mezzali is guilty. And so I think, I have not talked to Michael Raines, but I think Raines knows I've got to get my client out of here because these judges are going to send my client away.
And please say a word or two about the subtitle of your book being The Murder of Oscar Grant. What is that meant to exemplify in terms of how you see the relationship between black or African people and the state itself?
I made a conscious decision to use the word murder in the title, in the subtitle, because it would be in print. I make an attempt in this book to also look at the role of media in this case. And one of the things about media in this country is that they do not want to be slapped with a libel suit. They do not want to have that embarrassment, that costly financial embarrassment of being found guilty of libeling someone. And libel, quote unquote, is, you know, saying something against someone's character or something that is not true. Murder is something that only a jury can determine. We can say this person was killed. We can say that their life was taken. They were slain. They're no longer here. Well, we can use all kind of manner of things. But to say that someone is murdered, quote unquote, has to come from a jury's determination. And my position is that when we look at the definition of murder, an unjust, unjustifiable killing, and when we look at the fact that a young black man is dead at the hands of a white police officer, and the jury, his peers, determine, you know, when a group of his peers who are pro-police, who do not reflect the demographic either of where this crime occurred or where the trial of this crime is being held, that's an illegitimate verdict, in my opinion. The community that Oscar Grant came from says he was murdered, and that's the verdict I'm going with. It was an unjust killing. It did not have to happen, and it happened because of the callous negligence of white supremacy. That's why I say it's a murder, and that's what I stand on.
Tendesizwe Chimurenga, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your continued work. And please tell us how people can follow that work and get updates on the release of No Doubt, The Murder of Oscar Grant, and more.
At the moment, I'm on Twitter at Oscar Grant Cover. That is the Twitter account I utilized while I was reporting and tweeting from the courtroom. It was Oscar Grant Trial. I've changed it now to Oscar Grant Cover, to basically continue covering this story of Oscar Grant. There are the lawsuits that have been filed that have been ruled upon recently. We've got the movie Fruitvale Station. So I continue some of my work there with Oscar Grant Cover on Twitter. I'm also on Twitter for my other journalistic work and my other rantings and ravings at T. Chimurenga, T-C-H-I-M-U-R-E-N-G-A, and I'm on Facebook ranting and raving all the time. My personal website, tandisizwe.net, T-H-A-N-D-I-S-I-Z-W-E, and a website for the book, No Doubt, The Murder of Oscar Grant, are forthcoming.
This Second Childhood production is for the Killer Bees podcast and I Mix What I Like.org.